I'm Rumena Bujarovska. Difficult to pronounce. Rumena is fine. I'm from Macedonia, and I'm really happy to be here.
For those who don't know where Macedonia is, how do you describe it? Because you're in the middle of this continent, Macedonia in Europe, of course, but where is it?
Okay, that's a very good question. I doubt many people know where Macedonia is, and I don't blame them because it's very small. We have a population of about 2 million people. I think the size of Macedonia is about the size of Maine. It's in the middle of the Balkan Peninsula, or the Balkans, which is famed for wars. Thankfully, we haven't had many. It's just at the north of Greece, and it used to be a part of Yugoslavia, so that's what it's famous for.
Right. Actually, during the beginning of the Balkan conflict, or after it, I did a person on the street interview with people when Macedonia was in our headlines here many years ago, and I asked them, I didn't say, where is Macedonia, because I didn't want to give them a hint that it was a place. I said, what is Macedonia? What kind of answers do you think I got?
I'm sure you got fruit salad.
Yes, I got fruit salad. I got cocktails.
Okay, well, that's logical. There is a fruit salad that's called Macedonia. And there is a place somewhere in the U.S. that's also called Macedonia, Tennessee or somewhere. I'm not really sure. But there is also a huge contested name issue about Macedonia, which is why now we're changing the name to North Macedonia, because we had this huge issue with Greece. And it's like something out of a satire. It's like something out of Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels. But it lasted for 25 years. It was a great, stupid conflict. You can look it up. It has to do with Alexander the Great, also known as Alexander the Macedonian, in Macedonia only. And so it has to do with history and identity and heritage, and it's really complicated and, to put it bluntly, very dumb. So soon this conflict will be over, and we can, enjoy, normal relations with our neighbors. Yeah.
That's good news. Tell us a little bit about your writing. What is the nature of it?
I write short stories only, which is a lot of people find strange because they don't like it when you only write one kind of genre. And a lot of people think that if you write short stories that they're the ladder to a novel, which I've never felt the need to write.
Kind of like, I get the feeling that in the writing community some would interpret it, I certainly not what I would say, but that short stories are kind of kindergarten.
Right. They're like little novels. But I teach American literature at the university, and I spend a lot of time in the U.S. And I am influenced by a lot of American writers who never really wrote novels, like Carver, for instance.
Raymond Carver.
Of course, who spent a lot of time.
A master of the short story.
Of course. And then Flannery O'Connor, who's also known for her short stories, though she did write a couple of novels herself. I love Alice Munro. She's Canadian, but still, she wrote one novel. But I really don't think that you have to write a novel. It would be great if I did one day, but it's something that the market really wants you to do. I'm sort of against that right now.
It's kind of strange. I love collections of short stories. I'm not just saying that because it's your thing. But, tell us, what is the difference? How do you know when you capture an idea for a short story as opposed to something longer? How do you know when you have an inkling, something that, this is a story?
Well, for me, stories are episodes of everyday life, and they are the things that we experience but that have this kind of magical dimension to it that we can't really explain. And to me, they're subtle episodes of that actually tell us a lot about our society and about our intimate lives, which are connected. And the private is always also public. So in that way, I enjoy stories because they give me these snippets of universality. I don't know how to say that. But and that's why I enjoy them so much. And I enjoy reading short stories myself more than I enjoy reading novels, though I love novels as well. And I love poetry. And I love symphonies, but I don't write them. So That's why I've always wanting to write a short story came from reading a really good short story and saying, I really want to do this. I want to capture something so strong in such short, in a space that is so short, and something that's so concise and that can really hit you in a brief kind of fleeting moment, but that can leave a lasting impression. That's why I like short stories. And America's a great place for that.
Can you remember that first short story that made you, that inspired you to say, that's what I want to do?
I'm not sure about a first one, but essentially in the beginning, I would say initially, actually, I was inspired by Russian short story writers like Gogol. So The Overcoat and also Chekhov, his short stories just really hit me. And that was something that I just really wanted to do when I read Gogol's short stories. The Nose was one of my favorites, for instance. I thought, yeah, this is something that I would like to do. And then I got into the American tradition. So,
what does that mean, the American tradition?
Well, you know, these writers that you hosted here in Iowa. So Cheever, Carver, Flannery O'Connor, and then other writers like Salinger, you know, the classics. And then I like new writers as well, you know, classic new writers. Like, I like Lydia Davis, of course, and Lucia Berlin is also a writer that I enjoy. But you do have the 20th century, when you start off with writers like Hemingway and Fitzgerald and Sherwood Anderson, and then later on, you know, Flannery O'Connor, of course, is one of my all-time favorite inspirations. There's so much there. There's all this intimacy that's expressed in a social way, and you see a lot about politics and a lot about society and a lot about the local through their stories. So I reread their stories all the time, and I enjoy them so much. And I actually teach them at the university, so I get deeper and deeper into them every time I teach them. So
tell us about one of your short stories, one that you feel was really successful in doing what you admire in other short story writers. What is the premise of it, or can you take us on a short journey through a short story that you've written?
Okay, it has nothing to do with what I did with what American short story writers would do, but one of my favorite short stories that has not been yet, it is in the process of translation into English, is a short story about International Women's Day. I'm very interested in feminism and women's issues, and so I wrote kind of like a scathing short story about how Women's Day, International Women's Day, the 8th of March, is seen, especially in the academic circles in Macedonia. But I also put it in an intimate perspective, where it was actually a story about adultery. And it also had to do a lot about how I was perceived at the university where I was teaching when I hit my 30s, and people kept coming into my intimate life and saying, "Ah, you know, when are you going to get married? You got your PhD, you have a job, when are you going to have kids?" So they were interested in things that really are not their business. And they were rude beyond my perception. But that kind of thing is not considered rude. They're saying, "Oh, you know, actually you're supposed to think about those people as being really considerate about you, or that they care about you. So they're trying to make your life better for you, but in fact they're only trying to make themselves feel better about how they lead their lives." So I just I was really angry, and I didn't know how to express that. So I poisoned. I had them had food poisoning at the end of my story,
Did they die?
They don't die. They just throw up and have diarrhea. So yeah, I was. I punished them in a way that I felt was funny.
you like humor in your writing, it sounds like.
Yes, I actually have a PhD in humor.
Is there such a thing?
Well, I wrote a PhD. Yeah, there is such a thing as humor studies. It's very...
Really?
Yeah, yeah. They explore humor, the cognitive aspects of humor, also the social aspects of humor. There's a lot of psychology studies that deal with humor, and also a lot of literary studies that deal with humor. So I wrote my thesis on how humor functions in American and Macedonian short stories.
I'm interested. Who in America makes you laugh?
Well, okay, like Lydia Davis makes you laugh, for instance. Yeah, there's a lot of writers. Salinger makes me laugh. Yeah.
What are you doing here at the IWP? I'm asking that, of course, so many love to be here in this atmosphere with nearly 30 other writers from, I think, 27 different countries this year. What do you want to get out of this residency?
First, there's the American experience of being in a place where so many great writers have been. There is this community of people who are really interested in literature, and then... of course, there's a space for writing, And there are the resources for writing, which are amazing. The library that you have, for instance. And then there is this international community that really means a lot because you can exchange all of these ideas about writing. So, and then, of course, in the end, and, you know, I don't want to sound humble, and I'm going to be open about it, but it is, there is this, Iowa is really prestigious. So when you get this residency, people fawn over it. And it really means a lot later on for your career as well. So there's a lot of things. There's society, there's the community that helps you out, there's the university, there's the international community that you're with, and then also there's just the prestige of Iowa.
Have you been to Iowa before?
No, this is my first time.
So you've just been here how many days?
Three.
3 days. First impressions?
First impressions.
Something happened that surprised you?
Nothing. I've lived in the U.S., so, but never in Iowa. And it just brought back all of these things about America that I love at the same time, but that I, and then there's some things that I find annoying.
Like?
Like the fact that you guys eat out of paper and you drink coffee out of these plastic cups.
Like, uncultured.
It's, I enjoy cutlery. There's a lot of trash. People, it's like there's a lot of things that you use only once here.
Throwaway society.
Yeah, there's that. There's also a lot of carpeting everywhere and a lot of air conditioning that I find strange. And there's a lot of, it's very strict in terms of organization. So there's not much liberty to do things like impromptu. But on the other hand, that gives you that this organizational aspect of America where people are just so civil and they're so organized and nice.
They aren't that way in Macedonia.
No. They're brutally disorganized and dysfunctional in Macedonia. I love Macedonia, which is why I'm there, but there's a gazillion horrible things I could say about it. One of the things about the Balkans is that they're just, you know, uncouth, and they're...
Uncouth, for example.
Well, okay, I got out of the plane in Chicago, and we were supposed to get our... actually, in Cedar Rapids. And we were... They said, okay, just... they were going to give us our luggage. And they said, you know, our hand luggage, they had put it away, and then because the plane was too small. So they said, okay, just line up here by the right side of the wall. And everybody just lined up in such a wonderful and civil manner. And they were just so patiently waiting for their luggage.
And the scene in Macedonia would be how otherwise?
It would be people pushing each other and just being loud and annoying and cutting the line. And behaving like, this is my space and I'm going to get here first, and not really understanding that if you are organized in a way, that if you form a line and that if you think about the welfare of others, you think about the welfare of yourself. And people in the Balkans don't get that. They think that if they can somehow be sly and cut the line or do something that individually benefits them, it will be better for them and their family.
This has to be a pretty broad generalization.
Well, come to Macedonia and you'll see. It's a Balkan thing. It's maybe a Mediterranean thing as well. I think there's a term for it, and I think it's called... It has to do with also with families, like saying that supporting your family and doing even bad things because of your family, so for your children, for the benefit of your children.
We have this term Balkanization, don't we?
Yes, but Balkanization means, on the one hand, it means separating and in terms of conflict, but linguistically it actually means... That's really beautiful. That linguistically it means incorporating all the differences that the Balkan languages have in one. So, I mean, it's a broad linguistic term. I didn't explain it very well, but there's a lot of Balkan languages that come from different groups, but then they also have similarities. And these similarities are called, when they transmit to other languages in the Balkans, it's called Balkanization. So it has to do with merging rather than splitting, which is the political sense of Balkanization.
That's the only sense I know.
Fortunately, there's another one.
Thank you very much. And enjoy your time in Iowa. I hope you enjoy the time, but are also productive and inspires you as a writer.
I am sure that it will. We're off to a good start.